If you count yourself among those who just can't imagine life without your faithful dog curled up next to you each evening, you would have been a pretty rare breed just a century or so ago. That's when packs of feral dogs were roaming the streets of Detroit. People lived in fear of rabies, and the dog catcher prowled the streets scooping up all those strays. And then there was the flip side, the wealthy. Before we had Paris Hilton carting her Chihuahua Tinkerbell all over the world, the wealthy of 19th and early 20th century Michigan were pampering their pooches in the most outlandish ways. Bill Loomis has tracked the history of dogs in Detroit for the Detroit News. Always good to have him in the program, Bill.
Thank you, Cindy.
Well, as Detroit's human population continued to grow through the 1800s, it certainly seems from your story the canine population was doing exactly the same thing. How big was the stray dog problem?
It was a serious problem. It was not just in Detroit. It was across the country. And you're right. As people grew, the dogs grew, and they couldn't control them. It was much like rats. They were out of people's control. About almost every year, they would have a proclamation, have the marshal try to shoot the dogs or try to control them somehow. It was especially bad in the summertime.
Well, as you get into the 19th and 20th centuries, we found out in your piece, people were worried about rabies. And I think all of us who read and watched To Kill a Mockingbird remember the scene with the rabid, the mad dog, and Atticus popped up his glasses and took aim and took out the dog.
Right, right. I think didn't that happen with Old Yeller, too, or
yes.
something like that. Right.
So the fear of we kind of forget about rabies.
Oh, yeah, no. They used to call it hydrophobia. And it was a really dangerous situation because the dogs would bite kids, of course, and people in general would just run at the sight of a mad dog. In fact, there was a season in Detroit in the end of the summer called Mad Dog Season. That's what they referred to it. And people believed actually that rabies would only occur in the summer, that the dogs weren't rabid in the winter. But really, that was attributed because there weren't as many dogs on the street, so they didn't have as many reported rabies cases. But yeah, it was just awful, awful. And there was over 90% chance that you would die if you had rabies.
So it was a legitimate fear.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the press did not help things very much, did they? You have a headline you dug up, and I'm going to read it verbatim. Policeman fights mad dog in darkened cellar. Thrilling encounter with a brute. Children bitten. Really?
Yeah, that was a pretty common headline. And that was a lot of the reason why some people said rabies was just a made-up disease. They didn't believe it was actually a real thing. Especially dog fanciers, people that bred dogs and stuff, they said, oh, this is all just a bunch of baloney.
Wow. So that was the 1800s into the beginning of the 20th century. But at the same time, people were worrying about catching rabies from a stray dog. You bring us the pampered dog.
Yeah.
What was it like to be a dog owned by a wealthy Detroiter, say around 1890, 1900?
Right. Life was good. You slept on satin pillows and you ate cream chicken and mushrooms. And there was all these reports of these pampered pooches. And you had footmen that attended to you, and you had, you're given special rides, and it was almost laughable.
Yeah, didn't they have some kind of like dog club where if you were going away, the footmen and the maids would take care of your dog?
That's right. They were called kennel maids. They became dog breeders later. They really got to understand dogs, and women became serious dog breeders at the turn of the century.
And that's when things began to turn, where the middle class started viewing dogs as part of the family, and as opposed to the farmers who saw the dog as a working instrument.
Right, right. Even hunting dogs weren't pets, but the dog as a pet really became with the middle class in the late 19th century. And up into the 20th century, there wasn't stuff like dog food and things like that. That came later, and dogs really weren't allowed in the house. They slept in dog houses or under the front porch and that kind of thing.
Well, you think of some of those early cartoons, in
right.
Butch the dog would be
right.
out in his little
right.
dog house.
That's right. And people also seemed to like more aggressive breeds back then as well.
Like what breeds?
Bulldogs were really popular. Pit bulls, bull terriers, they called them. Big Airedales. Big terriers. And I'm not really sure why, but they were frequently listed most popular dog breed of the year would be dogs like that.
That is interesting. And
well, I think it has to do – this is my own supposition, but there was a more masculine culture back then. And those sorts of characters, that character of a bulldog, relentless and brave, was highly prized. It was also the days before lawsuits. And as soon as lawsuits kick in, you don't see dogs biting mailmen so much anymore and that kind of thing.
Okay. And I'm curious, what would be, if it, let's say it's 1920, what might I name my dog?
Well, the most popular name was Sport.
Sport.
Yeah. And actually, it was around 1912 when I found the list that listed the most popular names. And Sport was the first. Other names were Carlo, Jip, Dan, Frank, Fritz, even one called Ding Dong. That was a popular name. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, who knows indeed. But you also found, even as people were bringing dogs into their homes as pets and making them part of the family, you also found people just like today who didn't think twice about dumping a dog who was no longer convenient. You found one story that quoted a woman saying, "I hope someone finds and is good to Dick. He's been such a good dog all summer." What was that?
Yeah, right. Well, people would do that constantly. They would leave dogs up north, and if they traveled up north. And in some cases, I found they'd abandoned the dog. It was a dog that maybe didn't work out at home. And nowadays, we might take that to the Humane Society. Well, they didn't have Humane Society back then. So people, when they'd go up north, well, we'll just leave them in the woods. It was like a classic out of sight, out of mind mentality. And that was done with cats, too. It became a national problem.
Fascinating, fascinating. Just seeing how things changed. And I guess we have come a long way from those big, big packs of dogs that Detroiters in the 1800s had to worry about.
Yeah, well, that started dog catchers. That was in the 1880s when the first dog wagons appeared. And my only knowledge about dog catchers were from the cartoons.
Exactly. The guy with the net.
Yeah, the bad guy that was always catching the cute little dog.
Yeah.
But that was a characterization that was based on this reality back in the 1880s. The dog catchers were really hated guys. They were in Detroit, they were part of the police department. In other cities, they were elected officials. And
thus the term, well, you couldn't get elected dog catcher.
Yeah, exactly right.
Which was an insult.
Which was an insult because it wasn't a real good job. I think one of the fellows that ran, that was a dog catcher, ran the dog pound, had been bitten 100 times. So not a great job.
Boy, oh boy. Well, it's worth reading. A really interesting story by Bill Loomis. His look at the history of dogs in Detroit is in the Sunday Detroit News. You'll find it at detnews.com. Always love talking history with you, Bill. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Cindy.